Thank you, the Garland sayings. I'm really enjoying that, even if it's just a couple of the quotes that you're able to share. Thank you, the Garland sayings. I'm really enjoying that, even if it's just a couple of the quotes that you're able to share. It's not a book that I have read yet, and so anytime anyone else that. And I was also have been enjoying. Is it Paul Farini? Paul Farini's book as well. So thank you very much for doing that, giving me the opportunity to listen and take in all the ways that are pointers to the same thing is really what I get. I feel very grateful every Sunday to be able to listen to several people before I actually share, because there's a common thread. I mean, the common thread shows up, and it feels miraculous, which I'm sure it is. And so those are those little testers, no matter what teacher is speaking, no matter what student is listening. There's that resonation within that seems to tie it all together. From the immediacy of salvation this morning, I haven't read that section in quite some time, but it very much is in correlation with our lesson for today in the Gentle Healing Group, which is I accept atonement for myself. And atonement is the immediacy of salvation. It is the acceptance of God as He created me. It is standing in the divine self as the truth of who I am, and relinquishing the false self to to the nothingness that it always has been. So I very much appreciated her speaking about that little that littleness that the ego wants to insert into every situation, every moment it possibly can, that little twinge of whatever it might be, whether it's a grievance or a doubt or an uncertainty or a fear or a fill in the blank, all those ways in which we experience it, as the little things, even though it's not experienced as little. Even if it is little, an aggravation is an aggravation to others. That unforgiveness that we maintain out of wanting to maintain an opinion, wanting to elevate oneself, or as Reverend Gloria spoke to this morning, and I also noticed in Barb's reading from Paul Farini talking about that sense of worth. As in A Course in Miracles definitely talks about worth and tells us very clearly that our worth has been established by God, which means it is unalterable, no matter what we think. Every thought that distracts away from full worth is a thought generated by a false mind. A false thought that is not the truth of you. And so atonement would say, who would try to convince you that you are not worthy? Who is saying that? Who is saying that? If God Himself, and I believe in that something else, and every time that something else tells me I'm not worthy, I'm going to believe that instead. Does that, not seem foolish and arrogant too? As if we could change what already is. And that's the immediacy of salvation, accepting what already is. Accepting what already is. So yeah, it's wonderful to see all of the, and I so appreciated Doreen sharing her self-inquiry this morning around a just another manifestation of fear, in which I think she called it maybe disappointment no, not disappointment. She said she was discouragement. And that discouragement, all of that, because the payoff doesn't quite discouragement. And that discouragement, all of that, because the payoff doesn't quite seem to be as visible. Reverend Gloria spoke a thing that we can, you know, maybe visibly see or noticeably experience, like some sort of a grand something that helps us to or motivates us to keep going. And when that doesn't occur, we notice maybe this expectation around that. That, you know, I feel discouraged, and maybe if I was a good student, I wouldn't feel discouraged, and this discouragement is keeping me from doing what I know I need to do, so I feel guilty about it. And it's just this vicious circle that goes around and around and around. And even in her attempt at self-inquiry, she did not feel she was asking the correct questions. And I thought it was interesting that in her inquiry, beyond that, she was asked a question instead. She was asked the question. You know, why is it, you know, and the way it sounded to me, and this is just how I heard it, you know, almost like what makes you so special that you should not experience discouragement? Discouragement might be the very thing you need to motivate you forward. How do you know that discouragement cannot be used in what we might call a positive way? You know, if discouragement is in fact part of the allness, why would you resist that? Or why would you think that shouldn't occur to you or shouldn't be experienced by you? And, you know, we have past memories and interpretations of words like discouragement. And so we seem to have a habitual reaction to those words that might feel negative. Hey, even if discouragement appears to me, I don't have to get on the train ride of, you know, the downward spiral that discouragement can offer. I can see it differently. It can be reinterpreted for me. I can look at this as an opportunity and go further into the inquiry. So I really appreciated Doreen sharing that. And again, everybody that shared this morning, Becky shared, even my morning meditation, even with Karen not physically being present, I know her heart is there. I know the message is still a message of love. And she was also reaffirming, stepping into being the divine self that we truly are, to accepting the atonement for myself, opening myself up right now. And that was also part of Reverend Gloria's message, right now. Trusting right now. And so with that being said, I am going to take a quick drink of water. Okay. Just a moment of silence. The experience of God. darkness feels the slight breeze coming in through the window. Hears the birds singing on the telephone wire. Feels the love. Notices the ache in the heel. Hears the wind chimes. Oh, as the watcher, the observer, we rest in the foundation of awareness, aware of itself, accepting of all that is. And grateful. Amen. So we have been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. And we are in chapter one. Chapter one is a series of quotes by William Samuel from the book A Guide to Awareness and Tranquility. And these quotes were compiled by Michael Langford and as well as six other authors, I'm sorry, six other mystics, Christian mystics. And so we are now on William Samuel on page 30 in chapter one. And this is called More About the Sacrifice. And I do believe I read it last week, but I'm going to repeat it because for me, it's a happy piece. Happiness and joy are spread over the entire face of the land this instant. And there's that, the immediacy of salvation. There is contentment and satisfaction beyond man's greatest dream to be experienced in the twinkling of an eye, effortlessly, when one is willing to make the sacrifice. What sacrifice? The surrender of the intellect, of one's high opinion of his personal mental prowess and acumen. For how long? Only long enough to discern the heart for an instant. Whose heart? Your own. Not my words or preachments, nor my opinions or experiences, nor those of any organization or philosophy. Being the very identity you are. And of course, if anybody is participating in the gentle healing class, you know we have been practicing awareness, watching awareness. And every single opportunity we take to do that is to turn towards the very identity you are. And if any of you have listened to the or watched the video, the Alon gave a, I think it's gave a video, same thing, always about turning away from thought, away from the world, away from the body, away from feelings, away from emotions, and towards awareness aware of itself. And it's speaking of this as the teacher. It's not a teacher outside of yourself. It is within your own mind. The right mind, of course, the mind of God. Remember, ideas leave not their source. Yeah. So the real identity is the next piece. All who want wisdom, all who wish to have done with problems, let them discover their true, and this space you perceive as time, wisdom, all who wish to have done with problems, let them discover their true identity. And that's all in italics, that last piece. Let them discover their true identity. That's what accepting the atonement for ourselves is all about. Discovering our truth that I am as God created me. I trust that. Every distrust leads to a problem. Every time I doubt or listen to the egoic outside someplace, or on a thought, the thought seems to bubble up from where? Where does it come from? Where is it coming from? For what purpose does it seem to arise? Is it serving my highest self? Is this something I need to pay attention to right now? Is it grabbing my attention in a way that feels peaceful, energetic, pay attention, like a heightened awareness. This is for you. Pay attention. And there are obviously many ways that we can check within ourselves to answer that question. So back to the reading. Let us discover our true identity. He is not the personality he believes he is. He is not an ego. He is not a mortal, one among many, laboring to make his way in the world. His identity is none of these things. The actual identity, the capital I identity, is not caught up in a web of human woe, is not milling about in a mortal maelstrom of misery. And a maelstrom, I actually looked that up. It's just an interesting word. Not only in just the way it looks to me, but it's not a word that I hear often or, you know, use. God, I don't know that I've really ever used that word in my own language. I've seen it, but I haven't really used it. And it's a situation of confused movement or violent turmoil, chaos. Yeah. So the actual identity is not caught up in a web of human woe, is not milling about in a mortal maelstrom of misery. And we definitely have a right now example of that going on in England. This mortal maelstrom of misery, and the actual identity, The truth of who we are is not caught up in that web at all, at all. And that's why we're encouraged to turn towards that self every time we get distracted by another mortal maelstrom of misery. Because if our attention is directed outwards at the effects of listening to the cause of that, and what would be the cause of that? What piece of us? The fake piece of us, the imposter self, the ego, whatever you want to call it, the false identity that perpetuates all kinds of sticky webs over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And that won't end until we take our attention away from that and turn it back towards our real identity, our true self. Awareness itself. To those who discover their real identity comes a peace quite beyond the ability of words to describe. And with this peace come works of magnificence. Agony has to do with the dream identity we try so mightily to portray. Tranquility, sufficiency, and joy have to do with the real. And that makes me think of Reverend Gloria, having just that sense of movement in a, or a little bit of that, I don't know, I don't know, and stepping into I don't know with full trust. And it warms my heart that tranquility, sufficiency, and joy have to do with the real. And she's her trust is stepping into those gifts. That is the availability that will be hers and will be ours, will be anyone's, when we turn away from the habitual pattern that looks out for the answers when the answer is within. So we act as the wrong identity when we act as the ego who possesses this consciousness called life, and when we believe it is our personal property, the action of a purchase of the things that I have on my shelves in my bedroom right now, and you're not conscious of it. You can't tell me what's on my shelves in my bedroom right now. Of course it's going to try to personalize awareness or consciousness or life, capital F, life itself, and dumb it down, small it down, reduce it down, limit down a boundaryless spaciousness and try to make it small, and then convince us that that's possible. Yeah, me, my mind, exactly, my consciousness, my awareness, my life, not yours. We act as the ego who possesses this consciousness called life. And that's with a capital L, personal property. the action of a private mind. And when we believe it, that I can possess this consciousness, when I can possess the all of life as an individual. Yeah, those are all clues that we are listening to a false voice, and one which, in fact, we're making up too, by the way. It's not happening to you as if you're a victim. I do this to myself. So again, we act this misidentity when we think of ourselves as one who is the recipient of life. We act the true identification when we reckon identity to be awareness, life itself. We act the true identification when we declare that awareness, when we act from the standpoint that awareness is only being identity, I, instead of the body form, which is merely the focal point of images within awareness. And I swear to God, I've already read this, but maybe, sometimes because I've read this book before, it's very possible that I'm recalling the last time I know I read this before, and maybe I'm rereading it again by mistake, but it's not really a mistake. Mankind, Bill, Mary, Karen, Meg, Barbara, Dove, Jim, Carrie, Cheryl, Barb, and I don't know who Hunting for the Truth is, but you too. That's the misidentification. It's like a role we play in a stage production of misplaced values. And I had this, I was sitting outdoors yesterday afternoon, and I was simply contemplating being in silence. And I had this image of paint. And I'll tell you why, because there was an ad in like one of our local flyers for a free pint of Benjamin Moore paint. And somehow that idea came to my mind that I would go pick up a quart of paint. And so the image of paint stuck with me, and I was thinking of boundless awareness, or each of us. And then maybe we decide we want to dip our paint into an Experience Your Perfect Soul a few pages back in this very section, where it talked about how we heap upon heap all kinds of intelligentsia and concepts and ideologies and opinions and judgments and thinking in general onto the clear, pure white canvas of awareness, and then act like it's the picture that matters, and that it's the picture that's the actuality. It's the picture that's meaningful, and we don't even see the pure foundation of the canvas that could never have. It had to be using these words and symbols as a picture. But the point of it for me was that the background of awareness, or this pure canvas, this blank canvas, this symbolized with in white, white pureness. how colorful we have made that canvas. And it's not to say we simply can't dip the paintbrush in and cast whatever it is we choose to cast our attention onto. Where do we place our attention? Do we get distracted with the painting? When we do, we set and back towards awareness. That's the foundation. That's where the tranquility is. So again, the misidentification is an image-centered identity called man, mankind, Bill, Mary, you, and me. It's like a role we play in a stage production of misplaced values. It is the role of a ghost dreamer who dreams dreams, judges judgments, evaluates the valueless, and then operates as though those values, judgments, and dreams were real. We see that awareness, just that long do the intellect and common sense rebel at the statement that there is no value, power, or importance in things, or that things are nothing in and of themselves. But the heart understands. And so, you know, with that being said, what came to me right then was, so be gentle with ourselves, be patient with ourselves, because this false self does want us to rebel. It does want us. It's like Reverend Hal, when Reverend Hal spoke this morning, that's one I forgot. I enjoyed Reverend Hal this morning as well. He was talking about that sense of straddling the fence, where he recognized that wanting of God, but also that rebelling against God, wanting God to give it to me my way. You know, again, once again, going back to that misidentification that wants it my way. And so, you know, I want God and I want it my way. And that's, Reverend Gloria spoke to that as well. Her fear about really diving in to this path she's feeling clearly called towards and not straddling the fence. And so when we notice that within ourselves, that habitual power in anything in the world, there's no importance in all a lie, all of it, not parts of it, all of it. The ego wants to find that little piece of that statement that it still holds dear to and, you know, doubts. Jesus is not kidding when he says all or nothing. We turn away from that little voice that wants us to maintain a trust in the nothingness that it really is. I mean, if we do Doreen's exercise of self-inquiry or any sort of a practice that gets us to turn, pay attention to what's going on in the mind, you know, look at the thought and do some sort of an inquiry that asks, is this thought serving my highest self? Am I feeling joy, tranquility? Is this thought one that serves everyone? Not just the me, my, mine, but serves the whole. Does this feel fresh? Or is this an ego preservation strategy? Value and importance are not out there with the thing, but here, where awareness itself is being aware. Let us give to Caesar, and then in parentheses it says things, that which is Caesar's, and to truth, that which is truth's. Things are simply things, but they are not the value or power. They have no authority in themselves. And there's a zillion combinations of paint splatters, ego preservation strategies. It's easy to be distracted by the painting. And we layer upon layer upon layer as we fling the paint. Here, I'll dip it in discouragement today and fling that on the canvas of the universe. And maybe I'll use yellow with the blue paint. And so let's see the green that makes, and I'll fling that one. And meanwhile, you're doing the same thing. And we end up with this canvas of paint that's so thick, we can't even believe there was ever a pure canvas to begin with, even though it's the very foundation and the only thing that really exists. Because we've given value and importance to what's out there, to the things. And the Course calls those idols. You know, all those ways that we look away from the truth. Those distractions that we maybe engage in an active sense, that lead away from awareness. The instant that big bag of wind, the pseudo person, and its personal responsibility for awareness, the big bag of wind, the instant that big bag of wind is let go, that instant comes conscious knowledge of identity as tranquility. And that goes back to the immediacy of some place between a very intense desire for liberation that is heartfelt and accepts in the holy instant the immediacy of the truth of who I am. There's not a gap, like some sort of a time frame where, you know, 2 weeks has to go by so that I can, I don't know, scrub up and get ready for it or something. I don't prepare myself because what? I'm not worthy? We talked about worth all morning. I have to go to confession. Somebody spoke about confession. What would pure awareness have to confess except that it is pure awareness? That would be its confession. That would be its sharing. That would be its gift. Not some sense of I've done something wrong and now I have to atone in order to gain favor from something other than myself. That's an old, old loop. And instead, we can use confession or confessing within for a different purpose. I will confess the truth of who I am. How about that one? Say three Our Fathers and two Hail Marys for that one. And come back next week and do it again. So, the knowledge of identity as tranquility. It is a tranquility that does not ebb and flow, come and go between serenity and sadness. It is permanently established and undisturbable. Certainly, in my own personal experience, confession in the old manner was routine, and so it was a regular thing through my eighth grade education, going to confession. And when I recall that, I can recall repeating the same quote sins over and over and over. It was the same thing. Like every time I'd go in that confessional, there was like no new juice going on there. It was like all old stuff over and over and over. And when I, you know, reflect on that now, there was always that sense of guilt in between and four Hail Marys, but there never was like any sort of true healing, because I knew I was going to fight with my brothers and sisters before the next time I went to to the confessional. So there was nothing really going on there. It was just a big loop of nothingness. It wasn't a permanently established condition when I walked out. I didn't feel healed and whole and pure. Maybe for a minute. So that's not the kind of tranquility that this is speaking to. This is a knowledge of an identity and a tranquility that is beyond what is presently known, at least in my experience. So from this moment on, one is never long tempted to play the role of liar. Yeah, wow, that's like a little smack upside the head, as my dad used to do to us. From this moment on, one is never long tempted to play the role of liar. We choose to be awareness. It's an interesting term, because as we, in quotes, rest in misidentification, because there is really no rest there. We're kidding, rest, but it's not this permanent, undisturbable, tranquil rest that this section speaks to. It's the rest that ebbs and flows, comes and goes, and sometimes is outward, rather than inward to the self, which is awareness itself. Okay, again, from this moment on, one is never long tempted to play the role of liar. We choose to be awareness only. Dear one who reads these words, you are properly identified as awareness. Improperly identified as an ego who possesses awareness. It is the same awareness. It's the same awareness. Awareness cannot be possessed, owned. It's free, unrestricted, unbound, spacious. If we believe ourselves to be the possessor and act accordingly, we must have all the distortions that go with such an acted upon belief. If we relinquish the assumptive possessor to become aware of the real identity, unjudging awareness itself, and hold peace beyond human comprehension. I like the way that's worded. We find the fabled peace Doesn't it sometimes feel as if these, words like beingness, awareness, isness, consciousness, doesn't that seem like the fable, the unknown, beyond what's presently understood in the intellect, completely in direct experience, all the time? Doesn't that simple identity feel more like the fabled peace than the actual relative world, the illusory dream feels more real and unlike a fabled dream than our real identity feels like? Caught up in the fable, for sure. A fabled, yeah. We find the fabled peace beyond human comprehension. If we just do what this identity demands, and somehow, even seeing that word demands, I noticed a little constriction within myself. Not much, but the word demands has old connotations to me, like, you're not the boss of me. That's what comes up like right away for me. You don't demand anything from me. I'll do it in my own time. This simple identity demands, and all it asks is that I turn towards myself. Myself, the truth, the peace, the serenity, the joy. Thank God it's demanding that, because otherwise I might just go on and on and on and on and on down some fabled dreamlike existence forever. Thank God it's trying to get my attention with a simple demand. Turn towards yourself, girl. Look. See the seer. Watch the watcher. The father of lies, the old man, and the veil will be rent from top to bottom. The mist that covers the entire face of the land will be gone. There will be no more scales on your eyes. There will be no more tears. You will see as you are seen, because seer, seeing the seen, and that is S the seer, seeing the seen, the S-E-E-N, and in parentheses, is all there is to you. And that's just what I said. See the seer. You are awareness itself and only. It is our good fortune to be infinity itself, and consciously so. When? As quickly as the liar is loosed and let go. Who is the liar? The personal ego who says, conscious, page 35. And I have been reading from William Samuel. And so next week we will begin on that page and should be finishing that little particular section, which was called The Real Identity. So thanks for joining me, guys. I appreciate your attention and love you all, and I'll see you today. Bye.